Happy holidays and welcome to the Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. My name is Phil Rude. I am the dad.
And I'm Austin Rude. And I'm the son. And I'm Santa Claus.
No. Oh, ho, ho.
He could not make it in the studio with us today.
No, he's a little busy this time of year. But we are going to talk about a holiday movie.
Yeah, a holiday movie, but not a Santa movie.
Not a Santa movie, exactly. I mean, there's a kind of appearance by kind of Santa in this movie.
Did I miss a scene of the movie?
I think the
where is
the
Santa
old Japanese man who dies wanting to get drunk is somehow supposed to represent Christmas gone wrong. I think he is some sort of Father Christmas character.
This Christmas of disaster.
But also, we'll get into all that stuff later. But,
okay.
We're watching a holiday adjacent movie. Let's call it that, because I would watch this movie in July.
That's fair.
But
also, it's not like Die Hard, where it's just like a movie that takes place during Christmas. This does have the holiday themes within it of like,
for sure,
family, found family.
Oh, I think there's a lot of holiday meat on the bone here. It's just so different from an American holiday movie in that it's not just sort of like Christmas trees and lights everywhere and, you know, like the visual language of American Christmas. It's so different.
They include all the traditions in there, which includes Elf on the Shelf now for some reason.
Thanks, Target. But I want to talk real quick before we get into that about, I think we covered this last year, but just like a refresher, how do you feel about holiday movies in general? Christmas movies. Let's just say Christmas movies, because I'm sure there are movies for other holidays, but most of the mainstream ones are Christmas based.
Right. I'll speak to what I've seen, which is just Christmas movies. Not a big fan. It's not my favorite genre by any means, but it is something that kind of comes with the season. You know, I'm not gonna seek it out, but if one of my friends is like, let's put on Elf or some other like really famous Christmas movie, I'll be like, okay, because it's gonna just put you in the holiday mood.
It's a little hard to avoid it sometimes if you're like flipping channels, or
it's
even
everywhere.
Like the streaming services really push, you know, like Max is terribly shameless about it. It's hard to find something, or it was. Now Barbie's on Max, so now it's hard to find something that's not Barbie. You know, they get a hold of something and they really shove it down your throat, and the holidays are really no exception to that. But I'm the same way. I'm not a huge Christmas movie fan. Some of them are good, but the good ones I feel like have been played out so much that it's kind of like, I don't want to see this movie anymore, you know?
Right. You get a little tired of it.
Even if it's a movie that I like, A Christmas Story, I like it a lot, but I have seen that movie so many times that I just really do feel like I don't ever need to watch that movie again and I'll be fine.
I mean, I work retail, and, like, the amount of Christmas songs that I hear...
Oh, Christmas music, like, is also, yes.
It's the same thing, though. It's, like, it gets annoying after a while.
We've had the Christmas music playing at work. It's just whatever station in town is, like, the 24-hour Christmas station.
Mm-hmm.
And I welcome the change for the most part, because normally we have country music, pop country radio playing, and I hate it.
So you're getting something else that you hate.
By the time Christmas is over, I'll hate this. But like the thing you come to realize about Christmas music is there's a dozen songs, and they're just played by different people. They're done in different arrangements, whatever. But like you're just hearing the same songs over and over and over.
Oh, it's in a different key this time.
And it is how I feel about that, too. I did want to point out, I did watch, I'm bringing this all up in order to bring up this video essay that I saw a couple weeks ago, and it's called Snow Westerns Are the Best Christmas Movies, and it is making a case for watching westerns that take place in wintertime, in the Yukon, in the Rocky Mountains, whatever they are, and saying, these are Christmas movies in a lot more ways than you realize. The snow gives you a Christmas mood if, it, you know, we're in this time of year. It is, like, synonymous with it. It's also about mythologizing a period in history and lionizing, like, the American cowboy in the same way we lionize Jesus or Santa Claus. And it's just sort of, like, making this real good case of, like, a lot of Christmas movies really aren't good. They're good for nostalgia. They're good for manipulating you into feeling whatever the Christmas spirit is or what, you know, and that if you want to watch actual good Christmas movies, an alternative, they're not really saying like these are literally Christmas movies, but just saying like these can sort of be good parallels in a lot of ways. If you watch these instead of White Christmas or Christmas Vacation or what, you know, whatever else, like, and these are actually good movie. So I thought that was a really, really interesting point of view.
I could see how they're similar, but I don't know, cowboys, I just don't think Christmas.
No, that's the whole point, is to have something different than, you know, so many Christmas movies are the same. They look the same. They have the same kinds of people in them, the same kind of archetypes.
Right.
And this is the idea of like, it's getting at a lot of the same themes maybe, but it's very different visual language. And I really thought that was pretty interesting, especially something they didn't mention in the video that I think is a great addition to that is Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, because not only is that a snow western, but it is about a bunch of people who don't like each other being forced to stay in the same house together.
So it's found family as well.
That's actual family, not found family that wants to be there. But I thought that would be a good addition if you're looking for something different to watch this Christmas, aside from what we're about to talk about, which was brand new to me.
And spoiler alert, I would recommend it as a Christmas movie. I would
totally recommend this as a Christmas movie.
Whatever. Yes,
100%. Yeah, watch some snow westerns. Watch The Hateful Eight. I think it's wonderful. If you have a horribly dysfunctional family, watch The Hateful Eight and you'll be like, I see my people here.
Brokeback Mountain, now officially a Christmas movie.
You know what? That does take place over the winter at some parts, and there are some holiday scenes in there.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And a really solid movie.
I still haven't seen it, so yeah. Go ahead and take my gay card away.
It took me a long time to see it, and I hosted a podcast that's title was a parody of Brokeback Mountain.
Just confirming that you don't have to see something to parody.
No, you can parody it, and you can talk about it. Anyway. Let's talk about what we watched for our Christmas movie this year, Oz.
Let's do it. This year, we watched a 2003 animated Japanese film, Tokyo Godfathers. In this one, three homeless people find an abandoned baby in a dumpster, and they set out to return her to her parents. And while they're doing that, they're forced to confront their past traumas and missteps along the way.
That's right, and this movie stars Toru Imori as Jin, Toshiaki Yumagaki as Hana, and Aya Okamoto as Miyuki. This movie was directed by the legendary Satoshi Kon, and written by Satoshi Kon and Kiku Nobumoto. I am sorry, I'm sure I'm butchering these names. Satoshi Kon, I have heard his name before. I looked up his filmography. Paprika was the big one I recognized. Mm-hmm. He's like a legendary Japanese anime director. And Kiku Nobumoto, who wrote this, also wrote a ton of anime. Like a lot of, what's the one everybody hated the live action? Cowboy Bebop. Okay, yep. Samurai Champloo. shampoo, sorry. A bunch of stuff. I am not an anime guy. I mean, just get that right up front. So I'm not familiar with a lot of this stuff, but some of it, a lot of it I have heard of. I have a lot of anime friends. I have family members who watch a lot of anime, and I am aware of a lot of this stuff. So I know, like, these are big players in anime.
I'm sorry, but when you say I have a lot of anime friends, I just picture you standing right next to, like, someone from Attack on Titan or something. Just, like, this shifting animated
somebody
character
with spiky hair, and then there's, like, a schoolgirl on the other side of me. It's all just very awkward and weird.
You and your purple-haired classmate just...
I'm not gonna... I just want to get out in front of that. I'm going to mess some things up. I probably messed some names up already. I don't have the vocabulary to talk about anime probably properly or about Japanese film in general. I just want to talk about this film and how it sat with me personally.
I think that's fair. Let's not let the weeaboos gatekeep.
No. Like, I just, yeah.
You know, we're coming at this with our perspective.
Trying to save us some email here. I do apologize if I'm ignorant about something that's very common, or I'm mispronouncing a name or some sort of cultural reference that I miss, or cultural touch point. You know what I mean? Like, because there is some stuff in here that you just kind of go, oh, that's a little unfortunate. And then you go, oh, this movie's 20 years old and from the other side of the planet. So there's...
And also translated into another language.
And yes. So
you
there's
don't know
just,
really the connotation.
There's just some kind of stuff that I don't... I'm letting a lot of stuff slide, whether or not I should. I don't know. That's where I'm coming from it. I'm rambling already. Let's just general reactions. What did you think of this movie, Oz?
I really liked this movie. I quite a lot of thoughts on it. They're all a little scattered right now, but I think my biggest takeaway from this is like an anime version of Raising Arizona.
Ooh, interesting. I like it.
I had a feeling you would like that.
I'm a big fan of the Coens and Raising Arizona.
Only seen it like once. I mean, I don't even know if I've seen the full movie, but like from what I remember of it, it's kind of raunchy and also kind of heartwarming.
It's less raunchy, more like absurdist. It's okay. It's like a I think they describe it as like a live action Looney Tunes movie.
That does make sense for it.
Where Nicolas Cage is
like
playing Wile E.
Ridiculous.
Coyote, essentially. But yeah, no, that's actually a great comparison, especially like the third act of Raising Arizona, where they decide to take the baby back.
Right.
And yeah.
Where they're trying to do the right thing.
Right.
This just does it from the start.
Yeah.
But it is still very raunchy, and you know, these are very flawed characters, but like, just so heartwarming. Like, it really is. It kind of sneaks up on you, this movie, I feel like.
I agree. Totally. I liked this movie a lot. You said they were very flawed characters, and I think that's why I liked it so much. I feel like so much of what we're losing... Here's my old guy rant where I talk about what's wrong with cinema now. But, like, there is so much, like, I feel like American studios are afraid to have flawed characters. We can't have this flawed character. We can't have this flawed trans woman. They'll think we're being anti-trans. No, I think you're showing a person. I think you're showing a real person. Right. And I think you showing someone being bigoted towards that trans woman is also showing a very real person. I think there's so much great stuff about the flaws of the characters in this movie that is what made me root for them. I rooted for them because they felt real.
I love that. Can we talk? It's kind of like the elephant in the room here.
Sure.
Hana. Yeah. They call her Ms. Hana for a lot of this.
Yeah.
But also sometimes Uncle.
Uncle Bag.
Something.
Uncle.
Yeah.
Because it's like a bag lady. But right. They're also referring to Hana as a man.
Right.
And so there's a lot of cross gender insults thrown at Hana in this movie.
It's a little confusing. I don't fully understand all the terms, and of course it's in Japanese, so we're just getting like whatever the closest getting English
the subtitles are, the slang terms are going to be a little rounded off, probably.
Right. So I'm willing to overlook. We have a few slurs in this and whatnot. Sure. But I don't even think it's like distasteful. Like I think this movie is not PC at all, but it does it in a very like realistic way. Like essentially it trusts us enough and respects Hana enough to kind of just have her exist and be misgendered and like, I don't know. We keep going with the story. I'm really struggling here.
Here's what I love about Hana is that this is a character who is constantly being misgendered by her friends, by her found family, by the doctors who treat her. And Hana's entire attitude towards it is dismissive, where Hana is like, I know who I am. I don't care what you think of me. And I think that makes me root for Hana that much more. I think she comes up as a very self-assured character to me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's right.
She's just sort of like, throw your insults at me. I don't care. Like, I know who I am and I know how I'm living my life and I own that. And I think that's such a refreshing kind of take on that character, where they're not standing up and giving a monologue about, you know what I mean? Like, it's not this...
It's not pandering.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah.
She's not here to give us a dumb...
A lesson.
Stupid lecture.
Yes. You know, that comes out of a gender studies 101 class. You know, like, it is simply, this is a character living her life, regardless of what's going on around her. And regardless of what other people think. Because their whole thing is, they're all homeless. And they're all shunned by society. You know, like...
Right, they just have different reasons and then different things.
Anything on top of that, being an alcoholic, being a runaway, being a trans person, is just, like, we're already shunned for being homeless. Who cares after that? Like, there's a real, like, undertone of that whole thing, that they are homeless people, you know?
Which that's also a community of people that's kind of overlooked in general.
Yeah, this movie shows them as... Hey, homeless people are people.
Right.
Like, yeah.
We don't get that reminder very often.
Not a lot, no. But
from media, at least, I should say.
Yeah. So this was a really different feeling kind of movie to me. Just all of those factors played in.
It is. I also wanted to say about Hana that, it's a little much. I get what the movie's going for. Like, everything that we said, I agree with. But the counterpoint to that is, tone it down a little, guys. Like, we don't need to have her be called the F slur, like, 5 times in this movie. Like, they use the term, can't remember, homo a lot.
And homo is thrown around a lot.
I'm kind of thinking that it's more akin to, like, the way modern Americans use the word queer as just like you're gender non-specific, but I don't know if that's what the movie is going for.
I don't know. It didn't, none of it, the F slur, homo, none of it felt mean. None of it felt like the movie was being mean.
Right.
It's a thing I see in a lot of like film discussion, on social media and, you know, where it all happens now. Video essays where comment sections go crazy. Like, having a character who's racist or homophobic is not the same. That's not endorsement of that, necessarily. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think where people get it confused is, like, I... American cinema, especially, we're very, like, simplistic. Like, you're a good guy or you're a bad guy.
Right.
We can't have a middle of the
road. We can't
take
a shade of gray or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're displaying someone doing something that's wrong, you're right. trying to teach the audience bigotry is wrong, you have to display them as a bad person outright or you're being offensive.
It's real Hays Code kind of shit.
It is kind of, you know, it's stupid. Like, yeah. It's over-policing and not trusting people, but it just dumbs us down. And so then we can't even look at, like, this is really just a slice of life. Like,
right.
When you look at the characters, I can't remember, Jin, I think is his name.
Jin, yes.
He's a bigot. He's rude, awful person, but he's also sweet, and he's also, there's many layers to a lot of people. But he is a bigot. Like, that is a thing that's in this.
No, I don't dispute that at all, but that's what I'm talking about. In, like, you said there's layers to people. Mm-hmm. And not all those layers are going to be good layers. And that's the thing that made these people feel like real people. You know, like, it is like...
Right, and make it feel like real life as well.
You know, it's a really strange dynamic to have this guy who is a bigot, and then kind of explore, like, the movie's not exploring it, but it leaves you to kind of wrestle with, like, okay, this is a bigot who uses slurs towards a trans woman, but a trans woman that he also hangs out with and chooses to be with. So is he really a bigot, or is that his, like, we see, like, we know about bigots and racists, it's compensation for something else. You know, like, it is your insecurity about what you've done wrong, which we find out what he's done wrong later on in the movie. Mm-hmm. And it is just sort of like, yes, it is defense mechanisms gone haywire, essentially, you know. Because I think at the end of the day, all three of these people really do love each other, whether they show it or not. Like, that is what this movie is about chosen family.
Mm-hmm. And you do kind of have, like, mom, dad, big sibling, yes. baby. Yes. It's cute.
It's adorable. It's and it's this family that you're watching and go, like, this is horribly dysfunctional, but there's unspoken love at the heart of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they say, I don't want to keep this baby, let's get rid of it. This is a bad idea. But none of them actually take any steps to take the baby to the police to, you know what I mean? Whether that's the right thing to do or not. All of them want to help with this baby.
They're all pretending
they don't.
Right. Yes. But, like, I mean, the little one, I don't remember their name, but,
I'm sorry. Kyoko, I think.
Maybe.
The younger, the, like, teenager.
Yeah. She gets, like, the baby book.
Miyuki.
Okay. Yeah. She gets the baby book when she goes shopping.
Right.
Even though, they're like, oh, I don't even want to go shopping. Like, making a big deal about going in the first place. But you're still going to pick up a baby book because you like the baby.
Right.
You're excited.
Yes. They all take turns, like, changing diapers and feeding the baby. And, you know, and it is just sort of like a... I don't know. I like it so much because they all pretend that they don't. Except for Hana, who thinks, like, this is akin to the virgin birth. I love the beginning when she's talking about, you know, God performing miracles. And she says, even if God made a virgin a mother, maybe he could do the same for a homo like me. And then she says, give me extra because I'm eating for two because they're at the soup kitchen. And later on, that person sees Hana carrying the baby. it's like, if you take that person's perspective, that little slice of perspective, that person witnessed a miracle in in that little sliver of reality Hana that they saw.
Mother Hana Mary.
is the virgin birth metaphor of this movie, which, you know, like, we talk about miracles happening kind of throughout this movie, like in small ways.
The whole thing is like God really what does Hana say, like God really loves this baby or something, like,
oh, there's
all the lucky things that are happening to the baby, and then the grump is like, you know, if this baby was lucky, maybe it wouldn't have been thrown out in the
right
first place.
We found it in the dumpster. Yeah, you know? But I think there's definitely a lot about like Christmas miracles or whatever wrapped up in this story. And it is kind of interesting because the baby is almost not a character. The baby is almost just a MacGuffin. But
yeah,
the...
Aren't all babies MacGuffins? We're just waiting for them to be later plot points. I mean...
That's true. That's true. That's a really good point. But, like, the baby... I don't know if I can call the baby an active participant, but it also, as the baby, I'm sure you're hearing a baby sound come through the mic right now, but also like all of the action hinges on the baby in some way. Like they're kicked out of the shop, like right before that van crashes through.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was sparked with the baby, but also them being homeless. But
I think the baby is everyone's motivation in the story.
Yeah.
But that makes sense because it's the theme. It's everything's about family, and that's what the baby represents to everyone. Some people are running away from family. Some people want desperately to have a family, but they can't have a family, as right. In Hana's case. And then there's, you know, the people who lost their family and they want desperately to get that family back. So they're going to steal it from someone else.
Right.
And all of that, I feel like the baby isn't doing anything, but the baby's...
That's a better way of putting it, I think. Yes, the baby is the MacGuffin for everybody to take action. But everybody's motivations are different. I feel like the baby is to our main characters is like the baby is like a chance of redemption. Like the baby is whatever went wrong in their life, that baby represents redemption from that. And I think that's there's an element of A Christmas Carol, I think, in this movie. We almost watched a Muppet Christmas Carol.
We did.
Let me just break here and just say thank you, everybody. We asked for recommendations of what to watch, and this was a recommendation from Nicole Davis of the Movie Go Round podcast, which is what put it on my radar. So thank you very much, Nicole. I'm so glad you recommended this, and we ended up watching it. But we were close also to watching Muppet Christmas Carol, and I also like that. Like we had the George C. Scott Christmas Carol, the real old one. Scrooge. I was really interested in watching like a version of that, and we opted for this, and I think we still got some Christmas Carol elements in this.
It's like, definitely in there. I can see what you're getting there's at the, there.
Each of them has a flashback scene, and that's sort of their Christmas past. The baby is their Christmas present. It is them currently working towards a goal and hoping that that's going to rescue them. And I feel like the old man that Jin, you know, gives him a drink or whatever, and the old man who dies, I feel like he's sort of like, hey, this is how you can end up. This is the bad road this leads to. The suicide,
so the ghost of future,
the suicidal
right?
mom. There's all of these ways, like, look, you can go even worse. You can... You know, this is where it goes if you don't right your ship, if you don't straighten yourself up, especially the younger girl who's avoiding her dad, mm-hmm. and things like that, which is, I think, the saddest moment in the world when she tries to call her dad.
Oh, it's really bad.
It's awful. Like, I mean, it's great, but it's...
But yes, yeah.
But I really think there's a lot of Christmas Carol elements in this, and it is about redemption, ultimately, in the same way that A Christmas Carol is. Without the one element, I think A Christmas Carol is a brilliant story, no matter how it's told. It's a time travel story. It's a ghost story. But the thing I never like about it is that Scrooge only redeems himself when he's told he's going to go to hell. Like, it is, you literally have to threaten him, to get, oh, wait, I'll be better then. You know, like, it is.
That doesn't make a person good.
Right. It is the antithesis of, like, you know, being a good person is doing something for reward or to avoid punishment.
Because you have to.
Yes. Showing him that hell is real.
God told me I have to pay my employees fairly.
This does all the work of A Christmas Story with, or A Christmas Carol without that part of it. So it is a redemption arc through actual action from the characters and actually them actually wanting to do better. I believe Jin wants to do better for his daughter. I don't think he's going to, but I think he wants to. And I think that baby represents, I can do better for this baby. I haven't messed that up yet.
Mm-hmm. He names it after his daughter. Right. I mean, that's like,
it's
right there.
But I think it's a really, really interesting original story, despite like having that influence from Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rich. I've never seen a movie like this.
It's a strange movie. With Jin especially, I think he's like the most fascinating character here. I mean, they're all fascinating in their own way, but like his story is really interesting, like in the spiritual aspect of it. Because like, I just keep thinking of the scene where he finds the old man, where he finds Santa,
mm-hmm.
and like he's talking to himself, and he's like, oh, I could just pass out in the gutter and right. die, and like no one would even care, and blah blah blah, just self-hating. And then he sees this person who needs help, and he stops and he helps them,
right?
And then that person starts self-hating and being like, well, I should just die in the gutter and blah blah blah. And he's like, you can't say that, you can't do that to yourself. And it's like he learns to treat himself better through that.
Well, and he sees like, oh, this is where this man is actually dying in the gutter.
Right. Like, he sees where it's going to
lead. This is what it looks like. And this is not how I want to go out. Like,
no longer a hypothetical for him.
Right. This is real. If I let myself do this, it will actually happen. This isn't just hyperbolic, you know, AA stinking thinking, whatever you want to call it. This is an actual possibility. When you live on the streets in the wintertime and you're an alcoholic, like
exactly.
And he's actually having to face that.
And then that's kind of undercut by the following scene, which is just a random group of teenagers beating up homeless drunks for no clear reason.
It's pretty vague. It's not as vague as you think it is, because, and I don't know if this still happens, I think teenagers used to go roll homeless guys all the time. I think that is a real thing that maybe it doesn't happen anymore.
There was a homicide case last year that was
okay. That, yeah, but like it is. I think them showing this is part of being homeless, and maybe it was
a thing that happens. But I didn't like it as it relates to alcoholism, because following that scene, it just felt like kind of an undercut moment in like. I don't know. I'd rather you show the consequences of your actions, not like some random bad thing that just happened.
I'm going to say that I think it flows with the movie, because this movie is like an odyssey. This movie is like that epic journey where you just keep meeting weird people and weird things keep happening. You know, they find a man who's almost run over by his own car. And guess what? It turns out he's the local mob boss. And then an assassination attempt happens. And then they meet this Spanish woman who feeds the baby. And it's just sort of like these, as they go off in their own direction, as they split up, as they come back together, they're encountering all these strange people, and some of them are dangerous and some of them are helpful. You know, they go to Hana's old, like, drag club where she used to work and, you know, find out, like, why she doesn't work there anymore. And the whole fact that you could have come back to us at any time. That was, you know, like, it's essentially out of pride that she doesn't go get help from people who love her. You know, like, it's I don't know, just meeting all these strange people throughout it. It's random, and yet it, like, feels fated, in the way that everything that happens to them feels like fate, like they're being, that's the god part of this. So
I definitely felt that, when, like, the assassin showed up, like,
yeah,
I was like, okay, sudden turn.
It's very odd. Yes.
I thought it was a whole new story arc that was going to happen, but it was kind of just like, no, we're going to get random characters and stuff thrown in here.
And I think that's what those teenagers were.
And that's fair. Looking at it like that, that does make more sense. I don't know.
It led him to ending up back at,
he does end up at
the club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back with his family.
Which is, I think, another way to look at that, now that you say that, is that, like, these people are family, and that they kind of cannot escape each other. They,
as much as they try to.
They keep splitting up and ending up back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Always by happenstance.
By happenstance.
Because God is guiding them.
I mean...
I do kind of like... It is nice to have, like, a religious movie that isn't overbearing, if that doesn't
this is the this is harsh. The argument we got into about Book of Eli was, I think that's the difference between a spiritual movie and a religious movie. A religious movie is going to preach to you. It's a Kirk Cameron movie. It's a God's not dead. It's something like that that is pushing you to go to church. This is sort of saying, like, hey, there's something bigger out here that's guiding us. We still have to take action. You know, like, this is sort of like a, there's a supernatural thing here. There's a spirituality to this movie.
And that does make sense given, this is the first I've seen of this director, but, like, reading the Letterboxd comments, so many people are, like, obsessed with this director. Rightfully so, just given this one, that I've seen. But a lot of them were talking about how this is kind of, out of left field for this director, that most of his work is very abstract, kind of surrealism.
Which I thought this movie was very surreal.
I mean, it is, but it is. It also is grounded in, like, the city landscape, and it does feel slice of, like, life, like a lot of anime.
You feel like real, like we said, like real characters, like real people.
Yeah, it feels very grounded in that sense, but then also, you know, when someone crashes the ambulance into the shop or whatever, it's very like,
and then they get out and they go, call an ambulance.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of weird comedy like that, that really, like, the comedy is surreal too. And the visuals are real trippy sometimes. And so when I was reading those reviews and they were saying, like, oh, this isn't as surreal as those other movies, I'm like, I gotta see these other movies.
Yeah.
You know, like
there's no story to those movies. It's just weird random images.
Yes, it's kaleidoscope, fractals and stuff. But no, I thought this movie was very strange while still being very relatable. It wasn't like surreal. It wasn't Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It wasn't some Aronofsky movie, you know, or something like that, that's like, I'm going to really blow your fucking mind. You know, like, this movie was just sort of like, no, we're going to take you on an odyssey, and there's going to be a lot of weirdness in it. But you hang with these characters, you're going to love these characters. And you do, right. You know, and I just think there's this movie just won me over with that kind of playing both sides of that fence. I'm going to get weird, but I'm also telling you a story.
It kind of throws you in the deep end right away, too. Like, I noticed as we were watching, I mean, the beginning, I don't know. I didn't understand the first scene at the soup kitchen immediately, yeah, what was going on. But then Hana brought the soup to the other homeless, uh-huh, and it was just like this instant banter. Like, it started up right away, letting us know who these characters were. And I don't know, it felt like maybe they had done some scenes before this, but it felt like they already had hit their stride together. These, yeah, actors, these characters, their chemistry was already there at the start.
There's a really cool. The screenwriting trick is like you start a scene in the middle of a conversation, you know, and I feel like you start your movie the same way. And whether you write more of that with the intention of cutting it, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Like, so you know where to go. But yes, I do like that the way we're introduced to Miyuki, is her spitting off the rooftop onto people. But also just sort of like them disrespecting her. And, oh, you punk kid, you know, mm-hmm, whatever. And she ends up saying something like, you know, I could go home anytime I wanted to. And Jin says, it's always the ones who say they can that never do. And then we kind of come to find out later on that I think a lot like Hana.
All three of
She can't go back. Yeah, all three. You're right. All three of them have basically shamed themselves out of going back. You know, they've all shut themselves out. They haven't been shut out. They've chosen to live on the street because of whatever embarrassment they feel.
So sad.
It is sad, but I get it.
It's something everyone gets, which is why this movie clearly works. I've wronged
people that I just will avoid now, where I'm just sort of like, I messed that up, and it's terribly embarrassing to talk to that person now.
I haven't talked to Django in weeks.
I
mean,
well,
I tripped over him once, and now he's
kind of
a
snob about stuff like that. But like, I get it, and I think most people do get that. I think most people do kind of say, yeah, I've wronged somebody, and I can't look at that person in the eye, or I screwed something up. I don't deserve to be this person's friend. I think that's part of, again, these are flawed people, and I think we can see ourselves in flawed people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Much more than, I need to see somebody my race, or my color, or my gender, or my height, or whatever you want to call it. If we could see ourselves in, like, a person's flaws, I think that is much more impactful. You know what I'm saying?
There was not a single white gay man in his 20s in this movie, and yet I related to the characters. It is possible,
It
guys.
Is possible, yes. This movie's not very diverse. A lot of Japanese people in it. I love the Tokyo setting. I love the art of the cityscapes. I don't know if that is photographs with filters. I don't know if it's rotoscoped. I don't know what it is. It looks amazing.
It's very pretty. All the background scenery.
All the background. The characters are animated beautifully. Mm-hmm. They're just abstract enough. They're not too realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're
not in that uncanny.
But they're
not
crazy cartoony either. You know, they're not like the anime expression where their whole face comes apart or whatever.
Right.
Hana
does get a little like that.
Hana is
the
most
scene.
Like that, yes.
I was like a little like, okay.
She's the most exaggerated character anyway.
It's funny because at a part I was like, ooh, this is a little offensive. It almost felt like a character of a trans person.
Right.
Except I know the style of anime. I know this is how they do their comedy. And so this is just like that comedy in the form of a trans character. But for a second, I had to remind myself of that. I was like, ooh.
Yeah. So, some of it was just sort of like, oh, the way Hana runs is sort of like, it looks kind of like what if you were making fun of the way a gay guy ran, you would do like this exaggerated,
yes,
kind of thing.
Someone got footage of me running.
But you're just kind of like, okay, but Hana's also trying to run and be ladylike or whatever. And it's just sort of like, none of it, I can understand, and I read some Letterboxd stuff that was like, a lot of this stuff is not aging very well. And it just comes back to me going, I don't think this movie was trying to be mean. Yes. I don't think the movie is being mean at all, even if there are mean people in it. I think there are some caricature-y kind of things.
But I stand by the fact that the line, you can't change your feet or whatever.
That is hilarious.
It was. You know, it got me so off guard.
They go, she's got some big feet, and said, you can't change feet. I was like, you know.
You actually can with the right surgeries. But you know, different topic.
Maybe in 2003 we weren't there.
That's true.
But
that's
true. No, I don't. I understand. That may be possible now, but that line was just funny. It was so I think it's one of those things. It was a really unexpected joke. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't expect a joke at all, much less. And it was just like, oh my God, that is kind of hilarious. And I think this movie is full of jokes like that. I think mm-hmm. there are just so many jokes that are like
the taxi driver.
The taxi driver is great. The action hero. We're not action heroes. And then by the end, Jin is like chasing someone on a bicycle. It is 100% action hero stuff. Yes. I don't know. I found this movie very touching and dramatic, and also very funny. And just surreal enough. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about this movie. I think if you're looking for something really interesting and new to watch this Christmas, Tokyo Godfathers is a great choice.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to label it a Christmas movie, at least it definitely counts as a New Year's movie.
There is,
mention New Year's quite a lot.
Yeah, they go
movie.
Over my entire holiday break in this movie. Yeah. So,
good. And it's back to work.
And it's back to work. That's right. Back to just being homeless, I guess. But yeah, there's, do you have anything else to say about this movie before we close it out with,
let me double check. I think we touched on pretty much everything, that I wanted. Oh, there was one thing, the ending cut short, and I love it for that.
So
like,
do I.
We could have had like four more Lord of the Rings style ending scenes closing out each
where they all reconcile with their yes.
And they didn't do that, and I was so glad they implied just enough, and then they wrapped up pretty much everything, and then they just hit the credits, and
she
was it.
She was the last one to not get a chance to reconcile. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the scene in Hannah's old club with mother. They call her mother.
Yeah, they called her mother.
And then there, Jin and his daughter, in that scene where they're both facing out, you just see their backs.
Uh-huh.
Is so amazing.
It's like practically silhouette.
It is a great, what an amazing choice of how to portray that conversation. I just, mm-hmm. you know, it's brilliant. But and she was the last one to and she was the one that we saw avoiding it the most throughout the movie.
Yeah, it was kind of like a secret, like clutched very close to the chest.
But I thought it was great. I thought it was great that they just opened the door. Okay, confirmation of who that is. Mm-hmm. And smash cut, we're out. You know?
Right.
It's really a great choice. The most non-Hollywood ending. I thought it was...
Hollywood would have spun a sequel out just to finish that story arc.
I think that was a great choice as well. This movie is on Tubi. We watched it on Tubi.
That's right.
Tubi, guys, don't sleep on Tubi. I know a lot of people dunk on Tubi because it is like the D-tier streaming service, but it's free. And they have a deep cut library. I mean, honest to God, they have some really great movies on there that you won't find anywhere.
And it's not like...
I'm not sponsored by Tubi, by the way.
It's not like, you know, some platforms like Hulu ads or like even YouTube has more ads than Tubi.
Yeah, they do.
Like, so really, it's just like you get one single ad every like 30 minutes or something.
Yeah,
I was expecting it to be a lot worse when watching this.
No, it's fine. Also, if you don't like subtitles, I believe there are dub versions out there.
I guess if you want to be incorrect about
look, however you want to watch his stuff. I'm just playing. I watch a lot of Miyazaki movies that are dubs because they decided, hey, when we dub it, we're going to get A-list actors. We're going to really do this. And I think all the dubs of Miyazaki stuff that I've seen have been really, really good.
No, I most of those, the high quality movies, yeah, they get the good quality dubs.
So I can't speak to this one. We watch it with subtitles, which was kind of tough because it was white text on a lot of white background.
Yeah, so much snow on the ground.
I did have a little issue with the subtitles in this, but I'm glad we got the authentic acting, you know, voice acting of the original on there.
Right. I do think that characters kind of change when you adapt.
It kind of
is an adaptation when you dub something over.
Yeah. And no, it totally is.
You lose a little bit of the original.
Other choices are made and things like that. But yeah.
I do want to go back and watch My Neighbor Totoro.
I've not seen the original of that or Howl's Moving Castle. And I'd like to see both of those. In the original voice cast. But this one, I'm sure you can watch it in a dub if that's your jam. Otherwise,
of course,
I do just like we did with Klaus last year, full endorsement. Hey, this is new. This is something new you can add into your holiday rotation that, you know, isn't as well known or isn't played on American cable, you know, 10 times a day. Like, the six Christmas movies that we have that are,
right,
you know, it's a this new is formula. Something Shake it really up. Different that I think you'll really enjoy it. I don't think it's so bad that it can't be a movie you can watch with your kids, probably a little bit older kids. Younger kids are going to be lost or bored by it, but
yeah,
I don't think it's out of bounds for this being a family movie.
That boob scene is going to go
there
over
is
well.
Some nudity in there that did surprise me, honestly.
One of the Letterboxd reviews I saw was just, ooh, nipples. Because that's what the teenager says.
I was not expecting that. And when she goes, big boobs, cool. Like, it's like, this movie, hey, this character gets it, all right? But, yeah, I just recommend this movie. I think, thank you so much again, Nicole Davis, for recommending this to us. I want to turn around and recommend it to all of our listeners. Give it a shot this holiday season. It's really good. Let's close that out and move to shout out. Do you have a shout out, Oz?
I do have a shout out. It's pretty predictable, but
have at it.
Doctor Who is returning this year.
That's right.
For a Christmas special. This is a brand new Doctor, brand new show, brand new start. And for all of the Americans
it's,
out there...
It's Nicolas Cage is the Doctor this year, right?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great.
Shudigatwa is the Doctor. And he is going to be gracing our screens December 25th on Disney+. So not at all sponsored. But if you're an American... Now's the best time to stream Doctor Who, so it's right there on Disney.
Now
so.
I know why you re-upped your Disney Plus subscription.
That's not even a joke. I know.
I've been thinking like, why does he care so much about getting Disney Plus back? Okay, this makes so much sense.
It was that and the Percy Jackson series that they're making. But yeah, no, Doctor Who, check it out. It's going to be fun, it's going to be camp, and it's going to be Christmassy.
Very cool.
So that's my shout out. What do you got,
very
Dad?
Cool. Have at it, Whovians. I have a 6-page comic that was accepted into an anthology called The Shadow Anthology. This is being put together by Kai Media, Lesser Known Comics, and Apollo City Comics. This will be funding through Kickstarter, as many independent comics publishers do. Kickstarter is actually the largest distribution channel for independent comics in at least the United States.
Really?
Yes, because it's hard to get large printings done if you are an independent or small publishing outfit. So that is, it's hard makes to get sense. In the diamond catalogs. It kind of has a stranglehold on comic shops, this, that, and the other. Mm. But either way, It will be launching January 2024. I had to think a minute about what year we're in.
Yeah.
January 2024, the Kickstarter is launching. Just keep an eye here. Keep an eye on my social media because I will be making a lot of noise about it. If you have any interest in it at all, please put your money down and get a book. There's a lot of great creatives. There's a lot of great art that I've seen early on. I'm getting to know some of the other creators through our group chats and video chats. It's really, really fun to be a part of. This is the first time I've ever been part of an anthology, a comics anthology. And so it's really, really fun to be a part of this, and it's really exciting to watch it getting going. And I'll just be making a lot of noise about it as we try and get it out there to people.
As you should be. I'm looking forward to it because I've read your submission, but I haven't seen the others. So I got to get the book to.
So do I. I mean, you know, we're just seeing like little snippets of the art here and there. People are sharing whatever. But I have a short story called Shepherd. It is a supernatural Western, and it will be in the Shadow Anthology. I'll be hooking links and stuff up to that. So thank you for enduring my shameless self-promotion, and get ready for it because there's going to be more coming.
A lot more.
Can't wait. Yeah, no, I can't wait either. It's going to be a lot of fun. On that note, we just want to thank you for listening to The Picture Show, our holiday spectacular. We really appreciate you spending this time with us and hope that your time is spent with those who mean the most to you this season, no matter what you're celebrating, if they are your blood family or your found family.
Or your dumpster family.
Or some babies that you found in a dumpster. Please enjoy your time with your people, whatever that means to you this holiday season, whatever holiday you're celebrating. Austin, how do people get a hold of us?
Oh, they can email us at our email. It's austinandphil@gmail.com. I know a lot of you have suggested kind of your holiday favorites in Dad's Instagram posts.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, by all means, give us your unorthodox holiday suggestion. Give it to us there at our email.
Yeah, we can. We'll shout those out on social media because I know this time of year, like we've said, I don't think we're alone. People are looking for other things to watch in the holiday season. We're a little bored of,
especially with all the sequels that we get in general with Hollywood.
Right, right.
Let's get some new blood in Christmas.
But like I mentioned earlier, Klaus, we did that last year, and I got a lot of feedback on people saying, hey, I'm glad you covered this. Me and my family watch this movie, and we love it, and it's good to see you guys, someone talking about it. And when I had other people say, I'd never heard of this movie, I'm glad you shouted it out. We watched it. We loved it. You know, like... Mm-hmm. And it just...
That's one that people either know about or they don't.
Yeah.
And you know by how enthusiastic they talk about it.
People need to know about that, just like I think they need to know about this one. I think that's awesome. But yeah, let us know. Also, check us out on Letterboxd.
Oh yeah, we're there.
Aus, what's your Letterboxd handle?
I'm Austin N. Rude.
And I am Phil Rude.
That's us.
That's us.
We're on Letterboxd.
Do you have a Letterboxd review for this?
I do. Let me see. A name Pyla gives Tokyo Godfathers 4.5 stars and says, least dysfunctional family during Christmas time. and that's really what found family is all about.
I agree.
What do you got, Dad?
I have got Anna Anomaly gave Tokyo Godfathers 4 stars, which I also gave Tokyo Godfathers.
Me too. 4 stars.
Yep. I could have gone higher, though. I'm just saying, 4 stars where I felt comfortable. If I watch this on the right day, this is getting 5 stars.
Right. First watch, it's 4 watts. 4 stars.
Yeah. Anna Anomaly said, seemingly designed to make you scream, it's a Festivus miracle a dozen times before it ends. Jin may be the action hero, but Hana is most assuredly the icon. I can't argue with that.
I agree.
Great review.
I also did see, this is an honorable mention, I guess.
Yeah, cool,
There was one review that just said, I'm too sensitive for this movie. And you know what? I think it was referring to, there was no context given. That was the whole review. But I can only imagine it was due to the inappropriate language being used towards Hana. But
it could be. I don't know. It said I'm too sensitive for this movie.
Yeah.
It could also just mean this movie is too emotional. Like I could definitely see people.
That is true as well. Maybe that was what they
having
meant.
Having some issue. I could see it either way.
It was
I
a three-star review, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
I just read it as like someone being like, you know, I don't like how they portray trans people in this movie. So I just, it's not for me. And I kind of respected that, even though I disagree with, I don't think this is a disrespectful movie, but if you do,
I'm not going to tell you you got to watch this.
Sure. To, instead of like screaming, raging in the comments.
This movie shouldn't exist. Yeah, yes. Like,
I thought that was a very appropriate comment. And so I just wanted to include that there.
I'll throw my honorable mention in here. This is someone named Morgan who gave this movie 2 stars and just says, shut up, baby.
There is enough crying in this.
There is a lot of crying baby in this, but you know, babies cry. What do you want?
I honestly didn't even notice it that much.
No, because they really mix it well.
We've
so
grown accustomed.
That
to
is true too.
Baby.
Yes.
At one point we had the film baby crying
and
baby
the real
baby.
Crying. Yeah, and it was like a surround sound. Yeah,
it was 4D. We got the 4D experience. Little throw up on a shirt.
That's
too.
Right. That's right. Anyway, that's going to do it for us and for the Tokyo Godfathers. Austin, do you want to read the credits?
Yeah, we did it all ourselves.
There you have it. Happy holidays from the Picture Show.
See you next year.